चले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नित्य नामने नमः विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नित्य नामने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे शेष शून्य पश्चारिणे Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Karada Shiva Sade Gaura Bhakta Ninda Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Karada Shiva Sadhi Gaura Bhakta Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nitai Gaura Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Gaura Hare Rama.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'll read a verse from Bhagavad Gita. This is the second chapter, text 69. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sa nisha pashato mune. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. Purport. There are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification. The other is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic men. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feeling sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in his sleeping condition. The introspective man is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. He goes on with his self-realization activities, undisturbed by material reactions. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unmini Tamdina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Koroti Vachalam Pangum Nangagyate Garim Yakripatamaham Vande Shigunan Dinataranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaman Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pucharane Niravishesha Shunyavari Pastacha De Sitarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This verse is one of several verses. Krishna's answering a question Arjuna asked. Arjuna, he was asking about a person who sthita pragya. Sthita pragya means one who's fixed in Krishna consciousness, translated previously as one who is situated in fixed Krishna consciousness. He asked Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is merged in transcendence? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? And this verse is one, as we said, of several verses where Krishna describes the characteristics of person who's sthita pragya, fixed in Krishna consciousness. This particular verse which we read tonight, Krishna is saying that what is night for all beings is the time when sthita pragya, he's wide awake. It could take that in a literal sense also, or also take it in an allegorical sense. But, and he says that, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. There are two types of intelligence, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. Intelligence, which is directed towards internal, towards the soul, and the intelligence which is directed towards externals, temporary physical world. Both are intelligence, and both produce a result when applied according to their particular goals. But the analogy is being given to help make the distinction between the introspective sage, or person who's looking inwards, whose intelligence is looking within. In fact, Krishna's first answer to Arjuna, when Arjuna first asked that question, he describes the symptom of that person, that he gives up all varieties of desire which arise from sense satisfaction, which arises from mental concoction. And when the mind is purified, he finds satisfaction in the self alone. Then he's said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada gives us an analogy of a sleeping person. We oftentimes emphasize the point that one of Srila Prabhupada's expertise in presenting Krishna consciousness is he presented it in a way that was understandable, accessible. And the way he made it accessible is by always using an analogy that's something we can directly relate to in our day-to-day experiences. Because sometimes if you get too philosophical, concepts are hard to grasp. especially if we don't spend a lot of time delving deeply on philosophical concepts. And Srila Prabhupada, understanding that, he would many times use different analogies which would help bring vague, abstract concepts closer to our day-to-day experience. But the same principles could be learned by such analogies. And I often like to use Prabhupada's example that he once gave an analogy to stress how important it was to use analogies. He said, if you want to look at how the moon is moving in the sky at night, if you look directly at the moon and don't take your eyes away from it, it's very difficult to perceive how it's moving. It's moving, scientists say so, but if we're going to use our direct perception, it's not so easy to watch it move. You have to wait some time before you can at least measure a distance between where it was before and where it is now, and even then, because the sky is so vast, it's hard to make a distinction. So he said that if you want to see the movements of the moon, if you look at the moon through the branches of a tree, then because the branches of the tree are closer, then you can see the moon moving from one branch to the next within a very short period of time. So that which is abstract and difficult to see can become more easily perceived by having something closer to our experience, like the branches of the tree is a lot closer than the moon. So here he's using also analogy in reference to the person who is sleeping. He says that the sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feeling sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in his sleeping condition. Sleeping is something we all have direct experience of. It's not something that's too abstract. And even Krishna is using the analogy in this verse that the person who's sleeping is the time when the introspective sage is wide awake, and vice versa. And we oftentimes use an analogy to help us to understand this concept of happiness and distress in relationship to sleep. Everybody has dreamed before, I'm assuming, so that's not an abstract concept. And there is a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam which describes the nature of the duality of this material world. And it states that although the duality of the material world doesn't ultimately exist, the conditioned soul considers it to be real under the influence of his conditioned intelligence. And he says this imaginary experience of a world which is separate from Krishna can be compared to the acts of dreaming and desiring. When a conditioned soul dreams of something at night, very wonderful or very terrible, or when he daydreams during the day of something he would like to have or something he would like to avoid, he creates a reality that has no experience beyond his own imagination, no existence beyond his own imagination. Therefore, this analogy is used that when a person is sleeping at night and dreaming, which we've all experienced before, I'm sure many of you had good dreams and bad dreams. Is this out of your experience, good dreams and bad dreams? Anybody not had either of those before? And do you have good dreams before? Yes? Who's had good dreams? Who's had bad dreams? Okay, so it's not too abstract. So the analogy is used is that when we have a good dream, generally why do we think it's good? Well, it's good because I feel good while I'm dreaming. Makes me happy. I know, everybody can have their own subjective good dream. Some person may have a good dream of meeting somebody they've always wanted to meet, or they may have a good dream of obtaining something they always wanted to obtain, or they may have a good dream of finding themselves in a very opulent palace and then finding out somebody tells you it's yours. Good dream. So it's a good dream until we wake up. When we wake up, generally we feel very sad. And we feel sad because we've come to the reality, so-called reality, that it was only a dream. And I felt good while it lasted, but unfortunately it was only a dream. But if you look at the opposite, a bad dream, and many of you raised your hand that you've had bad dreams before, and when you have a bad dream, whatever kind of dream it may be, again, according to one's subjective characterization of what it is a bad dream, I use the example that because I fly a lot and I fall asleep in the plane, sometimes while I'm asleep in the plane, I am dreaming of a plane falling fast. I don't know why, but it happens. But when I wake up, I look around and if I'm next to the window. If I'm not next to the window, I just look at the passengers around me and to see how they're... And then I feel some relief. I'm happy. Oh, it was just a dream. So the experience of sadness when waking up from the good dream and the experience of happiness when waking up from a bad dream, that sadness and happiness has no connection with reality. It's only connected to a dream. And that analogy is being used that there are night dreams and then there are daydreams. And actually, the daydreams, there's no difference in the daydream from the night dream. The daydream is that when we dream of something we would like to have or something we would like to avoid. That is the daydream. The daydream generally lasts a little bit longer than the night dream. And generally, the daydream, we dream of something we would like to have. When we're really absorbed in dreaming of it, then it produces a sense of hope. It produces a sense of meaning, purpose. I'm dreaming of it, and I like to have it, and I feel I have a sense of satisfaction that I'm on track. So we dream of something we would like to have, or we may dream of something we like to avoid. Many things we try to avoid. Generally, we try to avoid those things that make us sad. We try to avoid disease, try to avoid old age. We definitely try to avoid death. We try to avoid subjecting ourselves to a situation that will, based on our experience, will make us suffer or unhappy. But still, we're dreaming. We're dreaming of avoiding it, or we're dreaming of obtaining it. Therefore, The analogy which is being used of the night dream towards the daydream is to help us understand that the daydream also has no connection with reality. It's simply a dream. Because even if we get the fulfillment of our dream, just like the person, the sthita pragya, his intelligence, is going within. He sees this world from a different perspective. He understands that this world is temporary, and he's indifferent towards the, and Krishna explains, that's one of the characteristics of sthita pragya, is that he's indifferent towards the so-called happiness and distresses of this world. And he finds his satisfaction from within. As Krishna says, he finds satisfaction in the self alone. He doesn't find his satisfaction from coming in contact with the temporary sense objects, because he knows that coming in contact with temporary sense objects can't produce permanent satisfaction within. Therefore, he's described to be like the introspective sage, that the person who is sleeping at night, he's generally not aware of his surroundings. He's sleeping, he's fast asleep. But the introspective sage, he sees things from a different perspective. He sees that everything here in this world is connected to the Supreme. It's temporary manifestation of the Supreme Lord's material energy, but ultimately it's connected to him, because nothing can exist without him. That is his that is the vision of the introspective sage. How does he see that? He sees that by looking within and knowing that the satisfaction he experiences comes not from contact with the temporary sense objects, but the satisfaction he experiences within comes by understanding who the self is, who he is, and what is his connection with the Supreme. Srila Prabhupada used to use analogy. He says that that if one is in darkness, he cannot see anything. But as soon as the sun appears in the sky, immediately everything that was previously in darkness is revealed by the rising of one sun. So in the same way, we may not be able to see this world from the proper perspective, as we may see it differently, let's put it that way, from the materialistic person who sees this world and everything of this world, the temporary world, as reality. It is, in fact, Vaishnava philosophy teaches us that it is real, but it's temporary. That is the difference. It's real, but it's temporary. Whereas the soul is not temporary. The soul is eternal. And that's Krishna's ABCs to Arjuna, second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when he tells Arjuna that you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise, they lament neither for the living nor for the dead. And Krishna goes on to explain that dehi no sminyata dehe komaram jovanam jara, that as the embodied soul continually passes from boyhood to youth to old age, soul similarly passes into another body at death. Dhiras tatra namuyati, one who's dhira, he's not bewildered by that change. Just as a person takes off old garments, puts on new garments, the living entity sheds his old body and accepts another body. So many ABCs concepts. For the soul, there's never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He's undying, unborn, eternal, primeval, ever existing. Soul is not slain when the body is slain. Krishna he's enlightening Arjuna so that Arjuna can see everything in its proper perspective, because if one doesn't see in proper perspective, then the consequences are bewilderment. A lot of bewilderment. Why do we become bewilderment? Why do we experience bewilderment? Because especially when having to make decisions like Arjuna did. Arjuna was very bewildered. He had to make a particular decision, and he was looking from the external point of view, and Krishna was trying to bring him towards the internal way of seeing things, spiritual way of things, seeing things. But because Arjuna was forced into a situation where he felt obligated to do something that, but he couldn't see and fully understand the reason why, he became very bewildered. And in his bewildered condition, he actually said to Krishna, I'm completely bewildered. I'm confused about my duty. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So in this bewildered condition, I'm asking you to, you please explain to me what is the right perspective. How should I be seeing things? And says, now I am your disciple, soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. And Arjuna placed himself in a subordinate position for enlightenment by receiving transcendental knowledge, transcendental wisdom from Krishna, who spoke the ABCs of spiritual life that we mentioned in the second chapter, and then spoke to Arjuna how to apply those ABCs in life, day-to-day life, in one's work, in one's activities, in one's consciousness, and the cultivation of one's consciousness, how to become sthita pragya. How to become sthita pragya. It doesn't come just overnight. It doesn't come by simply by negation of the physical body, which is sometimes what many people falsely try to come to that conclusion, but simply by negation. And they become very frustrated because it's a very difficult process to detach ourselves from this world simply by negating it. Try it. You may do it with your intelligence for some point of time, but when it really comes down to application, it's not so easy, right? Because we become forced again and again to see, well, wait a minute, I've got to eat. I've got to need a place to sleep. I need an income. I have family. I'm supposed to just make believe I'm not this body and not to do anything to satisfy the needs of this body, and that's how I'm supposed to become spiritual? Give me a break. These concepts were actually discussed by Krishna to Arjuna. He made them understand that actually, no, it's not simply by negation alone that one actually becomes spiritual. And to try to become spiritual simply by negation can cause one to become misled about his actual identity. And that's one of the biggest pitfalls in trying simply to negate this world, is that by simply by negation, and Srila Prabhupada used to use the analogy, he used to say that if I ask you who you are and you say, well, I'm not Donald Trump. Everybody's awake now, right? Because everybody's fixed on this Donald Trump, right? Everybody, it's something everybody can relate to, right? I don't know why. It's probably because I'm thinking of Donald Trump, too. Well, anyways, if you say, I'm not Donald Trump, I'm not Barack Obama, I'm not Vladimir Putin, I'm not whoever the... Go through a whole list of them. But we don't define our identity simply by negation. Because although I'm not him, I'm not him, I'm not him, I'm not him, I'm not her, whatever it may be, who am I? So if we try to define our identity, our eternal spiritual identity, simply by negation, I'm not this body. Well, okay. All right, you're not this body. In fact, I don't know if it's a good example. But when I used to go to the University of Massachusetts, and it's a long time ago. I lived in the southwest section of the university. And they had these towers, the John Quincy Adams Tower, I think it was, and the John Adams Tower. You lived there too, right? Were you there the same year when the kid jumped off the roof of the John Adams Tower? Yeah. He was in your dorm. It's 1970, wasn't it? It's 1970? Yeah. Yeah, he told his friends, he said, I'm God. I'm not his body. And he jumped. Well, anyways, what his destination was, I don't know. But that was a rude awakening in my freshman year at the University of Massachusetts. And of course, I remember even at that time, there was a lot of, you know, existential. People used to question about. I remember I used to see it on my. I was in Pierpont. I remember one student did, God is dead. People were questioning their existence and questioning God and trying to understand. Anyways, to define our existence simply by negating that my identity with this body is not complete. And therefore, simply to try to detach ourselves from this world is an incomplete process for self-realization. And Krishna is recommending another method, which is superior, and that is, first, to try to know who we are. To try to know who we are, we can try to do that by an analytical approach, by the ascending process. Srila Prabhupada called it the Aroha process. But the ascending process is very difficult to come to something very conclusive. And Prabhupada used to use the analogy, he says, just like if you want to find out who your father is, you can go to one man and say, are you my father? And he may say, no. Go to another man, are you my father? No. Go to another man, are you my father? No. In this way, you can go, you know, all over and asking everybody looking for your father, and it's going to take a long time, and still you might not have found the person who's your father. So he said, then rather than taking the ascending process, then the intelligent person accepts the descending process, and that is you ask your mother. She saves you a lot of time. Generally, she'll have the answer. And then Prabhupada said that, you know, you can ask your mother, she can tell you her father, and the living entity has many mothers. One of the mothers is the Vedas. The Vedas is considered to be the mother because they actually instruct us as to who we are. And then, of course, as Arjuna submitted himself before Krishna, and he asked him, please enlighten me, please instruct me. When Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Chaitanya, he was renowned as a scholar. He was fluent in so many different languages. He was a minister to the governor, and he was such an important person in the administration of the government. But he said, when he went to Lord Chaitanya after much effort, he approached Lord Chaitanya, and the first question he asked him is, Kami, who am I? Many people think that I'm a great scholar, I'm very educated, learned, I can perform so many tasks, but I don't even know who I am. Tell me, who am I? And Lord Chaitanya's answer was, Jivera Sudupoya Krishna Nichidas, that the living entity is the eternal servant of Krishna. And just as the mother says, here's your father, the Vedas, the spiritual master, they point us in the direction as to who is our eternal father. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita, I am the seed-giving father of all living beings. Matak parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. He says, no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me just like pearls are resting on a thread. Aham savasya prabhavo matak savam pravartate. I'm the source of the material and the spiritual worlds. Everything's emanating from me. The wise who know this perfectly, they serve me and worship me with all of their hearts. It's just an easier way to come to the realization of who am I? The best way to come to the realization that I am a servant of Krishna is by hearing from those who can help us understand how to serve Krishna and help us to understand who is Krishna. And therefore, the introspective sage is somebody who's, of course, Krishna speaking about sthita pragya, somebody who's fixed in Krishna consciousness. Okay, someone may be fixed in Krishna consciousness, but what about for us normal human beings who are not fixed in Krishna consciousness? What should we do so that we don't have to succumb to the perplexities of trying to negate this ourselves from this world, or even deeper perplexities of trying to enjoy this world and then becoming frustrated in all our pursuits of enjoyment, realizing that there's still something missing. There's something vacant, as Prabhupada used to give the analogy, like the birdcage and the bird. If you feed the birdcage, polish the birdcage, but don't feed the bird, you have a very shiny cage, but the bird needs to eat. And if you do it long enough and just polish the cage and don't feed the bird, then one day you'll wake up with a nice shiny cage, but a dead bird. So in the same way, if we simply cater to, we'll become very bewildered. If we simply cater to the objects of the senses, looking how to gratify, how to satisfy the self simply by the objects of the senses, how to become, avoid distress, dream of something we would like to have, or dream of something we would like to avoid. We create a reality that has no existence beyond our imagination. And therefore, rather than staying asleep, then the introspective sage, he's awake by applying his intelligence, as we said, two directions. One is to apply the intelligence towards the soul, and the other is to apply the intelligence towards material elements, material ingredients, and how to enjoy them. Therefore, for an ordinary human being who's not still, it's not sthita pragya, then at least one can become sthita pragya if one learns how to pursue that understanding, jivera surupoya krishnera nitya das. I'm a servant of Krishna. Now, please instruct me, how can I actually fulfill this potential? It's there. It's my eternal identity. It's the constitutional nature of every living being. And therefore, real religion means how to pursue that identity, how to know what is my connection with the Supreme, not just how to detach myself from this world. And Krishna is so kind that he's given us a method to help us. Vishayavani vartate naraharasya dehina rasavajam rasopyasya param jistvar nirvartate. That the embodied soul, he may restrict himself from the objects of sense enjoyment, even though the taste for sense objects still remains. But ceasing those engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he becomes fixed in his consciousness. Krishna, who is situated within the heart as the super soul, and who is reciprocating, especially with those who cultivate a desire to attain him, from within, he gives that person that kind of satisfaction. I'm going in the right direction. So that satisfaction gives one strength so that one doesn't have to live a life of aversion. Very difficult to live a life of aversion. Oh, because aversion is just the other side of attachment. We're just thinking of the same things, only in a negative way. Well, I don't want this. I can't enjoy that. I can't enjoy that. But we're still thinking of it. But Krishna's given us something higher. He's giving us himself, and he's giving us the ways to approach him from within the heart, which is very satisfying. And what it does, it actually steals away our minds from these temporary things and gives us the opportunity to actually increase our attachment to Him. He's helping us all along the way. And now He'll help by appearing as Radha Gopi Balava. And you can all take His darshan. It's time for Aarti. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.